the station of the stars. RTI.
From the heart of Europe to the world, this is RTI.
Welcome back to part two of Postcard from Poprad at the end of August with myself, Eric Wiltshire, Lee Banks in, well, you know...
In the war.
Yeah, that's the one. And Mark covered in doo-doo in Paris.
Yes.
Having escaped it for a while. Mr. Roman Abramovich has been in court this week and having a little spat with another gentleman, and I'm going to get this wrong. I know so well I'm going to get it wrong. Berezovsky.
Is that what he's called? Because I got really mixed up. I wasn't sure if he was actually called Boris Berezovsky or Oligarch.
God. Oh, my word. But it's interesting because this Boris used to be a partner in some way with Mr. Abramovich before he left Russia and claimed that he was one of these sort of fix-it guys in the old days, rather like a consultant can be in certain areas. But Boris claimed that he was a real business partner, and so it was a £1 billion case. Absolutely, £3 billion in damages he was after.
Yeah, and you know it's cost $100 million to prosecute it.
Well, he'll have to pay.
Yeah.
Well, no. Well, right. Yeah.
Yeah, because
I mean, when you got that kind of money, I mean, it doesn't matter, does it?
Yeah, no, that's what I was just looking at, and I just realised. So shut up.
You were about to go down the road of Britain's paying.
I know, and then I realised it wasn't. So, will you just leave me alone now and carry on?
I mean, can I ask? I mean, this story, apart from being worth a lot of money, I mean, is it actually relevant to anything?
Well,
of course, it's relevant. Why stories got to have a specific relevance? These are the stories of the world.
I think coming up with that answer is irrelevant. I think what is relevant is...
Oh, I'm irrelevant now, as well as everything else, ladies and gentlemen.
No, I think what
this
is relevant...
You called me a fascist before, so...
Hold on, steady. I think the relevance is that what people don't realise is the judicial system in the UK is slightly different to so many others, where you can...
It's better.
You can, well, in some cases, yes, Mark, you can go to court and challenge people's decisions. Mm. And the court will actually see, depending on which kind of court, this was in the London Commercial Court, because it was a commercial situation, and they have experts in those particular areas, in those particular courts, unlike so many other countries. So, to me, this is very valid in that it shows that there is an opportunity to go to court in the UK if you think a potential business partner or not in this case has done some kind of wrongdoing. And it will be seen. Other countries, they just sweep it under the carpet.
And the thing is, it has public interest and interest to the public.
We mean both of those at the same time?
Both of those at the same time. That means you've got a fairly rounded story here.
How novel.
Oh, okay.
Can I just say something about what you were saying about the courts?
Well, you're going
I just
to.
Want to say this very briefly, because it's just something that I came across, and I didn't realise it, and whether everybody realises it. If you go for one of these no-win, no-fee court things, a lot of people think that they are safe going to court on that basis. But actually, and Mark will verify this for us, you're not safe, because actually what will happen if you lose the case, you will then be responsible for the other party's costs.
That is absolutely so right. Absolutely.
And people don't realise it, do they, Mark?
Absolutely. This is where they get sucked into claims management companies, for instance.
Yes.
So you just sign here, no win, no fee. But as Lee says, if you lose, then you may well take a very, very serious fall.
How do they establish that then, Mark? Give me an example.
How do they establish what?
Well, if you're
the question I wanted to ask Mark. It didn't make sense to me either.
No, if you're on a no-win, no-fee thing,
yes.
I'm assuming then that at the end of it, the judge says that you're wrong and the other person's right.
Yes.
So at that point, are you liable for their court costs and all that sort of thing?
Well, you're liable for all of the winner's reasonable costs.
And what you're not liable for is the fee to the company who went to court with you.
That's right. Other than their disbursements, which will have been hidden away, which will have been hidden away somewhere in the small print.
Yeah.
and if you read it carefully, you'll find that it's actually no win, no fee, except for our disbursements, and disbursements can even amount to things like barrister's fees,
which is like £500 an hour.
Which could be, it can be, the whole thing can be a lot of money. You need to be very careful about claims management. I understand, incidentally, that the oversight of claims management companies is about to be taken on by the Financial Ombudsman Service.
Good.
Well, it's good in principle, but seeing as the Financial Ombudsman Service is pretty half-hearted service anyway, I'm not sure it's really great. What we really need is a real firm set of rules and firm regulation, and that doesn't seem to be happening yet.
Okay, moving on. This story keeps rumbling on, but there's another twist to it. Julian Assange, the guy from WikiLeaks, and I'm just wondering who's paying for all this, has predicted he will remain inside the embassy in London, the Ecuadorian embassy, for 6 to 12 months.
Mm.
And who cares about this? Yeah. I think this is a non-story. I think he's... Julian Assange is one of the world's most boring men.
I quite agree. I've got a lot of sympathy for the situation. I hope that he doesn't get taken to the United States of America. No, all of that. But I have to say, he's a windbag.
Yes.
There we are.
Shall we ban him like we did the other one last week?
Yeah, ban him. Let's never name him again.
Let's not give him any
publicity.
Well,
no, we can't do that because it really could get very interesting. So I don't think we should commit ourselves to that.
Okay.
But he is a windbag. He expresses himself very, very poorly.
Do you know who he made us ban last week?
No.
Myra Hindley and Ian Brady.
You just said his name now.
Oh, no, well, if we're going to say Julian Assange, I'm going to say them.
Well, I just think they're all... You know, sort of, I don't know what you call them, celebrity-seeking idiots.
It's not that he...
I don't think he's celebrity-seeking, is he?
Yeah, he wants to be a celebrity. Of course he does. That's why
he wants to be a dead celebrity. He's refused to take it foot by mouth in 1999 or something like that. I mean, the tube must be... Well,
he's convinced.
Anyway, let's not go down that road.
You were talking about the nameless one, weren't you? I was talking about the other nameless one.
Yeah, righto. Interesting story. Now, I do find this very interesting. Because
this is boring, ladies and gentlemen.
Because recently there was a court case between Samsung and Apple in the USA, and the US courts found in favour of Apple.
Yes.
Now, interestingly, a court in Tokyo... Tokyo is where Samsung are based.
They're Korean.
Korea, where they... Well, it's close enough. Have decided that it's not...
Well done, Mark.
Thank you. Samsung did not infringe patents held on Apple.
We don't know if the court case is on the same patent because... and incidentally, those in the know say patent rather than patent. Patent yes. refers to shoes. You know, we don't know. There are so many of these things.
Why is this so interesting?
Well,
is it of public interest, or does it have interest to the public?
Might be some public interest in it, but I don't think it's very interesting to the public because I think most of the public just really want to get their telephones and get the best.
Yeah,
but it is an awful lot of money.
They are. Eric Strawpoll says this is boring.
No, if it is. That everybody finds in favour of Apple, it will mean that Samsung will have to pay a royalty to Apple, meaning the cost is passed on to the consumer, and so the cost of...
How much will it cost the consumer extra, roughly?
I don't know.
Pennies?
Yeah, probably.
Yes, pence.
And it doesn't matter. Boring.
Not really.
You're editing all my stories, I'm editing yours.
Oh, I see what you mean. So it could mean that... Let's take it out of context of this particular one. We'll have phone company A and phone company B. So phone company
push
A wins.
Push button A or push button B.
And if it is that... Yeah, it does a bit. It shows his age. If it is that phone company A and B have got very, very similar models, and if phone company B has to pay a royalty fee to company A to enable that software to go on their phone, it will put their phone up. Therefore, it means that they will be the more expensive phone to buy, and that's reducing consumer choice.
On the other hand, you see that the penalty might then persuade company A or company B to put more investment into innovation and to produce more competing products to increase consumer choice.
That's possible, absolutely possible. But this particular thing is all about a bouncing screen when you do something. I don't know. Anyway, one for Mark. Your friend Nicolas Sarkozy is contemplating a £2,000 an hour job.
£200,000 an hour.
Flipping heck. With the bank that already employs his good old mate Tony Blair, would you believe? Are you going to say hello to the boys?
Well, I mean, I hope it's not on Saturdays or Sundays, because it'd be on time and a half or double time on that, won't it?
Well, he will in France, He will in France. Apparently, Tony Blair earns around £2.5 million from his role as an advisor to J.P. Morgan.
So he'd have to do about 25 hours for that, wouldn't he?
I could do it a lot cheaper.
I'd do it for a tenner.
but they know how much your tenner's worth is worth.
Got a TV headline on this. I think it's a good headline.
What was your headline?
Another fine fortune you've got me into, Stanley. Okay. Fine.
Yes.
Fine.
Does this happen a lot with the old Parisian PMs in, Mark?
I don't know. I didn't know anything about the story, but I mean, all I can say is that, you know, once again, we seem to find that anybody who gets their nose into the finance industry trough, including the banks and so forth, come out really, you know, well, you know, everybody gets it and gets more and more and more. Meanwhile, the rest of us starve or have great difficulty. I mean, I read today that the new boss of RBS is getting something like a £2 or £2.5 million golden hello. What's a golden hello?
That's simply for taking the job. I know, but
that
IBS is really painful. That IBS is really painful.
But it's money you get without having worked anything at all. Now,
absolutely.
I mean, we used to have the chief executive officer of the British Banking Association, Angela Knight. I think she's just about retiring or something, or going off to do something else.
Angela Knight, right, there is.
She used to go on about people expect to have something for nothing culture. We can't have that. People, you know, people should. But this is something for nothing. It's all something for nothing. Golden hellos are something for nothing. Golden goodbyes are something for nothing. Yeah. And quite frankly, anybody who gets £200,000 for 1 hour's work is in a something for nothing culture. So I have to say that all the people down at the bottom, and that includes me, who feel maybe guilty about getting something for nothing and are being shamed all the time by their betters.
Point.
Thinking about something for nothing, don't worry about it, because look at the banking industry. They'll show you the way.
Mm. While the rest of us are trying to invent our way out of the recession...
I'm not doing this one.
Why not?
Because I wanted to say something on the last one.
Well, we'll run out of time. Go on then, you can say it.
All I was going to say is... the people who take golden handshakes and golden... Well, I'm not doing it now because I can't remember it. I was going to say the rush shower anyway.
All right, I got that one. Britons have risen to the economic challenges of the recent recession by becoming more prolific inventors, according to a random survey of 2,000 Britons, it claims. Lee?
Well, I think this is a really boring story, actually, because they haven't mentioned any of the things that they've invented in it. But when I picked it up, I thought, this is really good. But that's something that Britain should be doing, finding a way out of the recession instead of whinging and moaning about the fact that they can't earn money and that everything's so expensive. Go out and invent things. Inventing things basically means setting up your own business and doing something good about it. And that's all, really. I want to talk about Bob's new single.
I know you do in a minute, but interestingly,
you don't let me.
I will. I was actually chatting to the managing director of a big trade organisation the other day.
He probably wasn't, ladies and gentlemen.
I was.
Stop making it up.
Good. Hello, Richard. And he was saying the one thing that the Brits haven't got their heads round yet is that the actual work culture is changing, and we tend to chastise a lot of people who work from home. And especially today, and I'll give you a perfect example. There was a young lad in, I think it was New York, who's now a multimillionaire. And he sat in his bedroom and he made a game for the iPhone. and he was charging something ridiculously small, like about 50 cents for this game. He's now a multimillionaire, and he actually made it in his bedroom. Now, if he was to do that in the UK, people would just chastise and go, oh, it's not a proper company, he's in his bedroom. Where in actual fact, Britain's in a perfect place to have the sort of young people, the young scientists, the young innovators, who will work in their bedroom, probably in their dressing gown, but actually be the next generation of great wealth providers for the UK. And we chastise them for it.
I think you're right, because one of the biggest industries in Britain today is the gaming industry, isn't it? Sorry, yeah. The games industry.
The games industry.
And that is exactly what you're talking about. That's an industry which is growing in the in the back bedrooms of people's houses. Mm. It's like a like the cottage industries used to be decades ago. People set up businesses in their own homes, where I come from, where I live, in the village of the Damned. This used to be a village that was to do with leather, because it's surrounded by farms, and they used to make shoes in their own houses and all sorts of things to do with leather and sell them by the roadside. That's what Britain needs to do to be great again.
Well, I think I'll ask Mark the same question, because I must admit, in Slovakia, it's, you know, this home working concept, they really, there's a lot of people actually go, can't do that, no, I've got to go to an office, because they see it as not working, and not being a proper business if you work from home. What's the culture like in Paris or France, Mark?
Well, I don't really know. I haven't noticed much of a culture to work very hard in this country. I was coming back from the United Kingdom once, and I met a guy who a French guy on the Eurostar, who'd actually been working in the south of England for an English branch of a French business. And he said how pleased he was to be coming back, because they worked too hard in England. And I thought that said a lot. I don't know. I think that generally speaking, the French have got a very poor reputation of working hard. I think that some people are running their own private businesses and so forth work very, very hard. Mm. But of course, this is a country with a huge civil service. And they have very, very luxurious conditions by comparison to the thing. I mean, quite frankly, I'm expecting a lot of trouble in this country in the next within the next year, I think. I think that Mr. Hollande, the new president, has made all sorts of promises in respect of unemployment, protection of pensions and so forth, which I think are very unrealistic. And I think they've got some shocks.
Okay. Sharp has been downgraded to junk by Standard and Poor's, another one of these organisations. Well,
I never used to like them anyway, Sharp. I mean, I always thought it was a bit junky. I preferred, you know, JVC.
Really?
Yes.
Don't go down that line, Eric.
Why?
Because we'll be there for the benefits of JVC or Sharp. I could just hear your mind going.
No, it's not that so much.
My mind's going.
My mind's going. How many of these products are basically assembly lines for content or products that are made in other factories? And a perfect example is like RAM in computers. There's not hundreds of different places around the world that make RAM. There's hundreds of companies that manufacture computers using the exact same RAM as everybody else.
Absolutely.
And I do get a bit concerned, because people tend to have this, brand loyalty when it's actually not really valid today.
I think there's a... Is there such a word as generosity? You know, there's a genericness.
Yeah.
About these electronic consumer products now, which doesn't exist. And I think that that's right. And of course, I mean, what that does do is it allows consumers to benefit from much cheaper technology, because if they're all using the same chips, it does mean that the producers such as Intel or AMD or what have you, who are doing these kind of things, are able to produce them in vast quantities. Whereas if there were lots of individual chips and they were all very, very different, then we wouldn't have the benefits of the economies of scale. In other words, they would all be much more expensive. And also, of course, if they were all different, they would all be using different systems. And that would mean that we'd have electronics not talking to each other.
That's the big point, because if anybody can remember back to Beta and VHS... What a disaster that was when you got two competing systems, whereas standardisation across the electronics market, apart from Apple, obviously, makes for a much better way of working, and it gives the consumer more power and better, bang for their bucks as well.
Yes. I'm not sure if it gives the consumer more power, because if there isn't real competition between different organisations, then in a way they have the power because they then concentrate on a single product. If there are completely really different competing products, then I think the consumer really can make choices. So I think that you have to really, I think it's a compromise, and I think you either have to change, you have to decide between innovation, where you get lots of different companies on completely different paths, and consumers then can jump around and decide which one they want. So everybody's trying to innovate and to produce different things in competition, or you can compete on price. But that means everybody basically has to have the same product, running the same thing, and they all talk to each other. But what happens there is that the products get cheaper. And I mean, Windows, Microsoft Windows, I think, has had the effect of, if you like, squashing innovation, because nobody else has really found it worthwhile developing new computers and new systems to compete with them. But on the other hand, we can all, or most of the world, enjoys the use of computers now. And, of course, we couldn't have done that 20 years ago.
That's very, very true. It certainly was the case with, in your industry, Lee, of the print industry, it was at one point a very Mac-driven world because of graphics and things like that.
That's right.
And where I would say you're right, Mark, is that Microsoft didn't do the one thing that they're doing with Windows 8, which we had Harry on talking about a couple of weeks ago, whereby it was almost a close, I'm not saying it was a closed shop, but very close to it. Whereas with Windows 8, they're actually opening it up for innovation from student communities and things like that, which may well be a big change for Microsoft, which would be good.
Can I just say something on this subject?
Yeah. Go on, Lee, just for you.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
No need to be...
Mark, we can have a cup of tea, Mark.
Basically, what I was going to say, ladies and gentlemen, is very simply this, that Eric is quite right to say that computers changed the face of the newspaper and magazine industry and book publishing as well. That's what it did, overnight, virtually. The thing is, and anybody with any intelligence would realise that what it actually did, though, was destroy one of the greatest arts that this world ever had, and that went back centuries and centuries, and that is the art of printing and putting together books and newspapers and magazines and that kind of thing. And then computers completely and utterly destroyed everything that had been built up over centuries. And actually, computers are also destroying society, because we can have cyber wars and we all pretend we have friends that we don't have.
Possibly. I could go the other way on that one, but I won't, because it's getting boring. It's Jane Fonda.
Yeah, disgusting. What about that then?
Why?
Poor old Jane.
I've got great sight.
What's disgusting? A 74-year-old having good sex.
What's wrong with that?
That can't be disgusting. Unless it's your parents, of course.
Is there any public interest in that? Is this interesting to public that Jane Fonda actually has sex at 72? Why?
Four.
Why?
74.
74?
You said 72.
Bedazzled and vajazzled, I tell you. She should not be bragging about having sex if we have this draconian
world
Jane Fonda, who's a very sprightly looking woman, I have to say, at 74.
Yeah.
You know, I have to say, I mean, you would think that she was 72 to look at her. But she's revealed this. She's chosen to do this.
Yeah.
Harry thought he was with a trustworthy load of mates having a bit of a laugh.
Silly old woman at 74 decides to brag about her sex life. Where's the...
Mark, I've tumbled it. I know why the aggression.
I'm tumbling Jane Fonda.
We have the empathy of youth on our side with Jane Fonda. The other one, he just looks old.
No, there is a difference there, because there is a thing that anybody who knows me will tell you is the truth. Different to you, a difference between you and I is that I have always fancied older women.
Oh, right.
And the problem is now I have to go out with 98-year-olds.
Well, I was going to say, she's too young for you.
Exactly.
Same again, Jane. She only liked it now and again. And again. And again.
And again. I'm sure somewhere on this list, which I better get to, otherwise he'll only sulk. He'll just sulk.
I thought you weren't.
He's sulking, boys and girls, because he snuck a headline into our running order down on page 8, gentlemen. His Royal Bobness heads for number one with first single in ages.
Well, that's right, and they've just made a poem about the walk of Dylan as well on his 30th birthday. It offers views of the Lochan... Oh, sorry, the wrong Dylan?
Yes.
You silly, silly Parisian. No, his Royal Bobness, at the age of 71, or his Royal Bobness ain't going to go out and brag about his sex life or get his ginger nuts out for the public and things like that.
I bet he would if he got paid for it.
He's just done due diligence and gone out and made a new single called Ducks Quan Whistle. That doesn't say Ducks Can Whistle. It's the place called Duxquenny.
Right.
Whistle. And it's a whistle at this place called Duxquen.
Right.
Duxquen Whistle. And so he's got out. And it is the most incredible piece of elevated, charmingly, ridiculously funny and exciting music that he's probably produced in the last 10 years.
Right.
And it is stunning. And it is going to go straight to number one. The reason it's so good is that Dylan now has to be recognised as the world's greatest archivist of Americana. And if you listen to this new single, you will hear everything.
When is it going to number one?
When it gets released.
When is that?
In a bit.
Like when?
Few days.
Give me a clue.
Few days. It's the 11th of September.
That's a long way off yet.
No, I think the single's released now, and the album called Tempest is being released on November the 11th, because I have to go somewhere in the centre of...
Right.
No, September, you silly Billy Parisian.
9/11, he's going to release Tempest on 9/11.
Marvellous.
There is a reason for this. I can explain this.
Very quickly, you've got a minute.
Questions about this. It's because his comeback album, Time Out of Mind, was released on 9/11 at the same time without any reason.
Right, well, I'll tell you what we'll do, time. Lee.
And his first album came out on that date as well. And
Lee, hold your water. Just for reference, boys and girls.
According to my age.
I have an ongoing connection with the music charts around Europe. And each week, I get sent the music charts to my inbox on my email thing, and it tells
how boring life is.
That means I will be able to report back on Lee's premise that Bob Dylan will be number one, and we will look at the main charts for each, a selection of countries, and just see if Lee's prediction is correct or not correct.
Can I just say very quickly on that point that there is nothing outrageous about Dylan being at number one. 2 years ago, his album, which I've forgotten the name of now, but he's Something About Time, was number one in the country music chart and number one in the American ordinary chart.
Mm.
And he's number one in the book.
Right, time to say goodbye, gentlemen. Over to you, Mark.
Well, goodbye, gentlemen.
And you, Lee.
And I'm still not finished talking about his Royal Bobness.
That's a shame, isn't it? That was Postcard from Pop Rad for another week. We'll see you again soon, boys and girls. Take care. Goodbye.
From the heart of Europe to the world, RTI.